Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
You're listening to Griefcast with me, Cariad Lloyd. Griefcast is a place to talk, share and laugh about the peculiar human process of death and grief. Each week, I talk to a different person about their experiences of grief and death as we remember someone that they have lost along the way, whether it was a long time ago or you've just joined the club. Welcome to Griefcast.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey Griefsters, I hope you're having an okay week, wherever you're listening to at the moment, whether it's warm and sunny where you are, or you're facing the cold November, which is currently starting to creep into England at the moment. Thank you so much for all the messages I've had recently. I had a lot of messages, especially off Christopher's episode a couple of weeks ago. If you haven't listened to it yet, I recommend you do, because I think it might be in one of the top, it's in the top three of these of the Griefcast, and I've had a lot of people say it to me, and it's a really beautiful and moving episode, so thank you so much. If you enjoy the show, as ever, please do rate, review, subscribe. It makes a huge difference. And if you've joined me from the Apple Spotlight scheme as well, hello, welcome. This week I'm talking to the brilliant Sam Irving. Sam is an amazing improviser and an actor. He is part of the several improv troupes, one of them being Men with Coconuts, the Spontaneous Players, who do Spontaneous Sherlock and Spontaneous Harry Potter. You may have seen them if you've been at the Edinburgh Fringe. They're very, very successful there. Sam came in to talk to me about a very unusual experience. Sam is originally from Dunblane, and he was at Dunblane Primary School when the massacre occurred all those years ago. He was in reception. He wasn't in the reception cast that was affected, but obviously he was hugely, hugely affected. And we talk about that a lot on this episode, about how you can be near a tragedy and how the guilt of feeling that you perhaps you shouldn't be affected as much as you are, even though you are. And I'm sure we can all relate to that with grief, of how much grief are we allowed to feel. Sam also mentions a lot of organisations in this episode that are doing some amazing campaigning, both here and in America as well. And I'm going to list all of that in the show notes as well. So if there's anything that you miss as you're listening to the episode, do check out the show notes. That's where all the information will be. But for now, a huge thank you to Sam for sharing his story. And this is his story. So, Sam, who are we remembering today? I ask all my guests that, but perhaps it's a bit of a strange one this week.
Yeah, who we're remembering for me today, and it is a bit of an odd one, it's the children who and the teacher who died in the Dunblane massacre 25 years ago. I am from Dunblane originally, went to Dunblane Primary School, and I wasn't in the class with the children who lost their life that day, but I was in the same year group. So there was, you know, three primary one classes at that school. And I was in one, and the class that was the victims of the massacre were in one of the other two classes.
Oh, my goodness. And 25 years ago as well.
Yeah, 25 years this year. March was the 25th anniversary.
Wow. 25 years ago seems like a very long and a very short time. At the same time, like, because it does seem like a long time ago, but it also seems like it was such a shocking event. So you were about four or five?
I just turned five. And then, the 16 kids who died were all five or six as well.
Oh, my God. So if you're okay to go back to what happened. So were you in school that day?
Yeah, I was. I mean, I'll be completely honest. I don't have a strong memory of the event itself, of the day itself. I have a pretty decent memory of the immediate aftermath and the kind of the coming days and weeks and months. But I guess, you know, like any traumatic event, you know, I think my 5-year-old brain probably wasn't able to fully comprehend what was happening. Yeah. And so I've probably shut it out to an extent. But yeah, no, I was in school that day, and I do kind of have a memory of the aftermath.
What do you remember then? So you don't really, like, obviously you said you, I mean, I'm not surprised, trauma does all sorts of things to people, but to be five and have to deal with that is a lot. Is it kind of like you said, is it just a blur and then you, like, you remember the, like, where does your memories, where do they begin for you? Like you said, it's the aftermath.
Yeah, so as I say, you know, the day of, I really don't have a memory of that, but I remember afterwards, you know, there being, you know, thousands and thousands of bouquets of flowers that had been left right the entire road outside the primary school.
Wow.
Just people were sending flowers and gifts from all over the world. I remember there was again a kind of an inpouring of toys and teddy bears and stuffed animals, again from people all over the world. And you know, every child in the school got a teddy bear as a gift. I've still got mine. I've got a stuffed gorilla. I've got it downstairs in my flat now, which, you know, again was just, there was, it was such an impactful event. Not, you know, obviously in Britain, it's the biggest gun massacre in British history. It's the only school shooting in British history. So it's such a huge impactful event for everyone in the UK, but beyond that as well, you know, people in Europe and America and Australia, you know, anytime I mention where I'm from, which, you know, often I actually, if I don't want to get into a conversation about it, I'll just say I'm from central Scotland, I'm from near Stirling, or, you know, say, oh, I live in London, I've lived in Edinburgh, that sort of thing. Because if you mention it,
as soon as you say Dunblane, immediately, and I, you know, perhaps it doesn't, perhaps the younger generation don't have it, but definitely someone of my age is like, oh, I know, yeah, like, oh, Dunblane, the school shooting. Yeah. Like, it, your brain is just, like, linked to that place completely. So,
I think it's improved somewhat in recent years because of Andy Murray. and suddenly there being a positive connotation.
God bless Andy Murray.
Absolutely. And, you know, he's spoken about the massacre as well, because he would have been in primary seven when it happened. So he was also in school that day. But the fact that he's brought a, you know, a positive connotation to the name of the town to go alongside the negative one, because I think obviously it's important that we don't forget what happened. You know, we can't forget it, because it's, you know, those who forget history are doomed to repeat it, all of that. And it had such a huge impact on gun legislation in this country, and showed that can happen and can make a difference. So it is important we remember it, but to have something positive alongside that as well. And as you say, particularly for a younger generation, anyone younger than me, I think, you know, if they hear Dunblane, probably their first association is, oh, that's where Andy Murray's from. Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it, that, like, you can age someone sometimes by a memory.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
You'd be like, oh, that's not your... My dad originally is from Wales, and his parents are from a small town, which is sort of part of Cardiff now, called Bridgend. And when my dad was growing up, it was like tiny, you know, like they ran the sweet shop and there was like two shops. But it unfortunately had a horrific spate of kind of teenage suicides happen for a while. It was really, really awful. And whenever I used to say, I had this weird moment where as a kid, I said, oh, they're from Bridgend, they'd go, oh, right, where's that? And then afterwards they'd go, oh, where that awful... And I'd be like, oh, yeah. Like, so again, I just started saying Cardiff, because I was like, oh, this is really... It's a strange... Like you said, that way that you have a choice as if you are someone who's, you know, in grief or has been bereaved in a certain way that you can decide one day of like, how much am I going to reveal today? Like, how much do I want to, which I guess for you, something so, like you said, infamous as the school shooting, you're constantly having to negotiate that of like, oh, do I want to go into that today? Because of course it's going to be like me, like, were you at school? What like all that stuff just That's immediately.
It's immediate. I think the most common question, if I do share where I'm from, the first question I get is, oh, how old are you? So they're trying to pin exactly, you know, how affected I would have been by it, which is an awful thing to think. But and obviously there's so many people who were more affected by it than me, you know, the families of the victims, the people who were directly impacted, who were shot but survived, or who were in the classroom that day, in the PE hall that day. You know, I can only really speak for myself, and I you know, I don't want to come across that I'm speaking about this for anyone who can't speak for themselves in this situation. But it's also, I think, you know, until recently as well, I look quite a lot younger than I am as well. So people would say, oh, but, you know, you wouldn't have been affected, when actually, you know, it's pretty deeply affected, obviously, by the event.
But this is that weird thing we've talked about on the show before, of like the grief maths that people like to do. Like, oh, so if you were three, then you probably don't like as if that matters. Like, it happened. And you could have been, you know, a baby and still be affected by what happened because you grew up in that town. That whole town would have been in grief.
Yeah.
And I think it's weird that, I don't know where it comes from, but it's like people want to, I guess, something, especially like a shooting in this country, which is, you know, unusual, highly unusual and very shocking. People are trying to place, like, how sad is this person? Like, so that I can judge how I should react, you know? Like, it's like they want to go, oh, is he really sad? Do I need to be, rather than just going, why don't you tell me how you were affected? We kind of like to mentally prepare ourselves, but it's all kind of a weird etiquette.
Rather than just saying, oh, are you okay for me to talk about that with you, just trying to work out, you know, how how traumatized I am and how much I'm going to be affected by them bringing it up.
It's a weird kind of, I want to say British or English, but perhaps that's, you know, you're Scottish, perhaps it's a United Kingdom thing of like, I don't want to upset him, so let's work out how old was he, so then maybe I can work out how, and again, it's like, just ask someone, but it's almost like with the politeness steps in of like, oh, I couldn't possibly ask him, are you okay talking about it, which is actually the kindest thing to do to someone.
Absolutely. And the other one I get a lot is people just kind of say, oh. And it's not, oh, I'm so sorry. And it's not, oh, wow, you know, that's, you know, they just say, oh, and then don't address the elephant in the room, which is, you know, I'd rather they said, oh my God, you know, and like massively overreacted to it than just kind of clearly knowing what that means, but then not addressing it is.
And you know that, oh, is followed in their head by like, a lot of internal chat of like, oh my God, well, he must have, oh God. But they just have like learned not to say things out loud in that kind of polite, like we said, or faux politeness, because it isn't really polite, because you know they're thinking it.
I think it is very British. I think you're right. You know, it's just, oh, we can't possibly discuss it. What an awkward topic of conversation, you know. And actually, it's more uncomfortable not to address it.
Yeah, and I mean, you get that with death anyway. You know, like, I have that as someone who's lost a parent to cancer. People will be like, oh. Anyway, but what you've been through, again, it's that thing of like, I guess in a way, everybody has their own memory of it. Like, even I started the show with like, oh, well, I remember it happening. Because it was so, like you said, it wasn't just a shocking thing in Scotland, you know, it was globally shocking because obviously the nature of it was just so, so awful. And especially, for this country, that's not something that is common here. Not to say that because it's common in America, it's not traumatic. It is deeply, deeply traumatic. So when you got given that gorilla and the soft toy, so I have a child who is nearly five, and I can't imagine how you comprehended what was going on, because especially what I know from my experience of five-year-olds is like they jump in and out of comprehension quite a lot. And so things you think they understand, they've 2 days later, they act like they haven't understood. And you think, oh, I thought we definitely got there. Like, how did your brain even process it? Or did it just not?
Yeah, I don't know that it particularly did. I think, you know, I don't think anyone, you know, an adult or a child, or, you know, 5-year-old, really, as you say, that brain's still very much developing, can really comprehend death, the violent death on that scale as well. I think, as a child, you know, I had a lot of nightmares about violence and, you know, I was a very anxious child, I think, probably already to begin with. And then I think that impacted me in that sense. So, yeah, I don't think my brain necessarily was processing it, certainly not in a healthy way. But then how could it? And, you know, I think my parents did an incredible job of making sure that me and my brothers kind of knew what had happened, but in a way that we could at least begin to wrap our heads around. But how could they, you know, there's no training that a parent can get in how go through that with their child. You know, it's difficult enough explaining death and loss to a child. But again, on that scale and in that way, I don't think anyone should have to deal with that, obviously. But a child particularly, it's how do you explain that and how do you process that?
Yeah, I mean, that's it. You know, I get a lot of people asking me about, oh, how do I talk to my child about death? And I'm always like, you know, you have to kind of be honest and talk about it. And that's such an important part. But when you're dealing with, like you said, something so violent and frightening, I mean, it's frightening for an adult to get, you said, to wrap your head around. As a child, like, it is the stuff of nightmares. It is the stuff of, like, scary films that you tell a child, well, that's just not real, you know, that doesn't happen. And I think that's, I recognise that as well. If you're anxious anyway, I was anxious anyway, and then my dad died. So it was like, oh, great, all the evidence I need. Now, there's the thing I was worried about.
Yeah.
Great, I understand the world is terrifying, never relax. So I can imagine if, you know, once you've been through something like that, like how your brain is just on alert a lot, right? Because it's...
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And as I say, I used to have dreams about, you know, I would worry about people breaking into our house and, you know, little things like, you know, my mum tells a story about when we were on holiday as a kid and I was absolutely convinced that the house was going to burn down. And my mum was saying, well, why would the house burn down? You know, none of us smokes. And I was saying, well, what if a robber breaks in and the robber smokes and he drops a cigarette? And, you know, it's these leaps of logic to justify the anxiety that you have in your brain. But yeah, so I had really horrible nightmares and, you know, my parents bought me a dream catcher at a time when that wasn't really something that was available in the UK. They got one shipped over from America because they were desperately trying to find any way to deal with, these horrible nightmares that I was having. And it's tough. Yeah. But again, as I say, I think my parents did an absolutely incredible job of handling it. Because again, like you were saying, you now look at it as a parent with a child. Yeah, I look at it now. My mum and dad would have been, you know, maybe like 3-5 years older than I am now when that happened. And I don't have kids yet. But I think about that, trying to deal with that from my parents' perspective, because, I'm basically the same age that they were when it happened.
Do you remember talking about it to, like, any of your friends at the time? Did it ever come up, or was it like a sort of group trauma in that nobody really kind of wanted to think about it?
We talked about it when I was older. We talked about it when I was in high school. Because obviously, again, as I say, there was people who were there. There was people who were shot and survived, who were my classmates right through high school. You know, who had scars from that incident. And so, it was talked about in that capacity. It was talked about in school to an extent, but when we were young, I don't think we really talked about it or processed it as kids. Certainly not. I think it came up occasionally in conversation, probably, and then obviously we would mark the day every year. And
would something happen at the school on that day? Was it kind of...
The school would mark it, and there would be, you know, maybe a minute's silence or something like that. But you know, to this day, it's the kind of thing where and you'll understand because it's true of any loss, everything reminds you of it. Mm. Do you know what I mean? And just little things that you wouldn't even expect to. But I think kind of magnified again because of the scale of it and because of all of the things that happened around it. So I remember after the massacre, there was a charity single released, which was, it was a couple of songs, but they did a cover of Knocking on Heaven's Door, but they added a verse. They got permission from Bob Dylan to add a verse about the Bairns of Dunblane. And then I was in this seedy nightclub in China. I lived in China for a few years. And one of my friends was, Scottish girl working as a bar singer there because make a bit of extra money while you're studying. Why not? And she got up and with the kind of the house band and they started singing Knocking on Heaven's Door. And I had to leave the room because I just had this wave of, emotion and, nostalgia, but not good nostalgia. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I think especially when something happens to you when you're very young. I mean, obviously, my experience is teenage, but what I've read about kids and processing trauma and grief, and obviously what you experienced was extreme trauma, is that you can't really, which I think is where the lie comes, oh, children are so resilient, which always makes me laugh because I'm like, what you mean is that 30-year-old is going to have to deal with that. Like, that's what, when you're looking at the small child, it's like they can't process it, they don't understand, and so you sort of store things up, don't you? And like you said, then when you get older, that wave hits you and it's like you're back, it's like you're experiencing it because at the time your brain just couldn't experience it. And I'm not a medical professional, I don't know the official terms, but that's what my experiences have been of talking to lots of people, of like how powerful those waves can be when you've had that experience as a child, because I think it's slightly different if you've had something as an adult, because you tend to have that at the, not the correct timeline, but you know, like a year or 2 years after you'll be in a bar, and it's not like it's 15 years and you're having to go, whoa, what, where's that come from? Because it's this stuff that, how can you comprehend it? You can't comprehend it, that children you knew and played with are now not there. Like, it makes no sense.
You're absolutely nail on the head there. It's not that children handle it better, it's just that they can't process it, so their brain fills it away until it can, and then by the time it can, it's maybe compounded and it's twisted and it's not the same emotion anymore, and you can't handle it in the proper way necessarily.
And it's often, I found, confusing for other people because they're like, whoa, why are you so upset? And you're like, it's a thing that happened 20 years ago.
Yeah.
But it's difficult if someone hasn't known you your whole life. If they've known you since that trauma or the death, then they can often help. They can see the timeline with you and they're like, oh, I know where this is. But if there's someone you met along the way, they can often be like, whoa, what is this? Because the emotion is so raw suddenly, if it is when it first starts leaking out, you know?
Yeah, I had another moment, probably the most visceral kind of emotional reaction I've had to it. I went to see, there's a poetry collective in Edinburgh called Loud Poets, do a lot of stuff at the Fringe. And one of the poets who was part of that at the time, and this was during the Edinburgh Fringe a few years ago, was a poet named Catherine Wilson, and she lost her sister in Dunblane. But I didn't know her prior to meeting her through poetry because her family had moved away. And I knew this, and I knew as well that she had a poem in her set about her sister. Even being fully prepared for that, we went in and we sat down at this incredible poetry show. And she starts saying this poem about her sister, and it's basically her describing her sister and all of the amazing things her sister is. And then she says, well, actually, that's how I like to imagine my sister. She died in Dunblane. And at that point, I nearly had to leave the room because I was howling, you know, racking, sobbing. And again, with a group of people who have known me for years and years, but as an adult, and probably knew I had a connection to that, but I don't think we're expecting the level of impact that was having, because I wasn't expecting
that.
I thought I was prepared, and I thought maybe, you know, maybe I'd, you know, have a, you know, a couple of tears rolling down my cheek in that, you know, like when you, you know, you watch a movie and you're like, oh yeah, that was impactful. No, this was, I haven't cried like that in, as probably before or since, at least as an adult. It was, you don't know how you're going to handle it, and so you can't expect anyone around you to know how to react either.
No, and as you said, I think that's really true, that sometimes you can go all like full Boy Scout. You're so prepared. You're like, you know, I know this film's about death, and I know what it's, I'm ready. I know what's going to happen. I probably will cry. And like you said, it when that emotion wants to come out, there's not a lot you can do about it.
Like
you do end up, howling where, you know, where you're sitting. And it's, it's... I think what's interesting, I wonder with what, because of what you've been through as well, of like, it's so stored and what people are looking at. I think what's hard for some people sometimes, they're like, they're seeing an adult and they're like, oh, this man's very upset. But you need to track back and be like, this 5-year-old is upset. Like, that's what you're, like, that racking is a 5-year-old being like, what just happened? That's awful. It's so horrible. I don't want it to happen.
Yeah.
But it can be hard for people to sort of, I think that's one of the most sort of compassionate things you can do, actually, is when someone is upset or, you know, even angry or even being annoying, is to kind of imagine the child them and be like, okay, what is actually being expressed there? Because it might be something that they just couldn't express as a child. But of course, that I can totally understand, like,
someone
who was there, someone who's actually, you know, did, her sister died in that situation. Like, it just...
It's a good segue for me to mention as well, actually, both Catherine, but also a guy called Jack Crozier, who also lost his sister. And I've known him for much longer because he was in my younger brother's year in school. And so I've known him through my brother, and they've both done incredible, you know, outreach work, advocacy work for gun control, both here. But they've also, they've gone across after the Parkland shooting in America. They went across, met with the families out there. They've done a lot of work for some incredible, you know, charities and advocacy groups after Parkland and Sandy Hook. So the Newtown Action Alliance is one of them. Change the Ref is one. March for Our Lives. So they've done, they've gone out, they've spoken to the families there. They've said, look, you know, we've been there too, you know. Dunblane Stands with Parkland was the big, you know, the big push afterwards, and helping to raise money and helping with the push for gun control out in the States, because, you know, they've again, as I say, they're some of those people who've been so much more directly impacted even than me, and they're channeling that and they're doing something with it, and I think, you know, I just wanted to give them a little shout out and say that they're doing amazing work.
That's incredible, especially after what they've been through.
And
I mean, we all know what it, you know, we've all read the constant headlines of things still happening, and I know this, the Sandy Hook thing obviously was a huge sort of watershed moment that a lot of people feel didn't change what should have been changed by then. And yeah, it's, you know, I speak to a lot of people on this show who've lost people through, you know, illness that still can't be cured. There's nothing that can be done. It's just one of those things. Sometimes bodies don't work. But when you have suffered a grief in a way where, you know, not that it was preventable, but there were, you know, there were choices made that made that happen, I think that's a very difficult grief to handle, because you don't have that card of, well, there's literally nothing that could have, like, you know, doctors did what they could and then people die. That you don't have that, you know, you have that, this shouldn't have happened.
Yeah, and again, it's that thing as well about it being it's a constant reminder. Every time there's a shooting in America, which is often, it's a reminder. And in the UK as well, you know, we're not, you know, I think we're obviously so much better on gun control and on levels of violent gun crime in the UK. But, you know, you saw that in August in Plymouth, there was another, there's gun violence again, and there still is room to improve in the UK in terms of legislation, in terms of monitoring mental health. There's a group called the Gun Control Network, which is set up for that, because, you know, you can still get one license to own a shotgun in the UK and buy as many shotguns as you want, or sport hunting guns. You know, there's no they're pushing for things like, you know, having a connection if you own a gun license for hunting or as a farmer or any of these things, to have some connection to your GP record so that if you are seen to be, you know, medically unfit to own a firearm, that is flagged up in the system, because you still can legally buy guns in the UK, you just can't buy handguns for personal ownership.
Yes, it's very, very well said that often in this country we're like, we're so much better than America. It's not always, it's not like there's no room for improvement here. Of course there is.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome back to Griefcast with Carrie Adloyd. I just wondered, like, have you, and this is a genuine question, there's no judgment in this question, but like, and you've mentioned it already, of like, how do you deal with the grief where you said, like, you feel like, well, I wasn't as impacted as others, but obviously you're still suffering. Like, has that been difficult to balance? Because I think, of course, you've been grieving, of course this has affected you, but I know that I can understand that weird judgment that we do to ourselves.
It is something that I think I'm handling better now. I think, you know, in my teens and in my 20s, I think I probably did feel like when I had those moments of outpouring of grief, of, you know, being something small just tipping me off, I kind of almost felt guilty because I was like, oh, well, I have no right to. You know, I guess it's a survivor's guilt to an extent as well, you know. You know, what right have I got? I'm alive, I'm healthy, I'm well. What right have I got to be so upset by this? But I think now we think of ourselves as adults from the moment we're 18 or 16 or whatever. But I think now that I'm 30, I kind of can look back and think, oh, actually, I still was a child when I was trying to deal with a lot of those emotions. And so, yeah, I think I'm allowing myself to be affected by it more and allowing myself to grieve more. But I do still, I think I do still feel a little bit like when I see people like Catherine and Jack or you know, my classmates who were directly impacted by it, I do still feel a little bit of guilt, which I kind of have to acknowledge and then tamp down a little bit of saying, oh, well, they have it worse. Because there's always going to be someone who has it worse.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think you put that really well, because there is, but it doesn't, like, if you do that to yourself, if you're like, oh, well, you know, but I wasn't affected as someone else, it doesn't change your feelings. So if you feel grief and you feel sad and you know, you've got that pain and anger that you need to get rid of, just saying, oh, well, it was worse for others doesn't make the pain and sadness go away. That's, if it did, it'd be great. If you could be logical about it and go, oh yes, I see, my pain doesn't, yes, well, it's not as heavy as that person, so I don't need it. But that's not how it works. It's like, you still feel it, and you can be feeling it just out of empathy, because you know, because you did survive. And I think it's funny, isn't it, we call it survivor's guilt, and I know exactly what you mean by that term, but in a way it's like you can feel so deeply because there by the grace of God go I, like, because of that you can feel like someone else's pain, and it is a sort of deep empathy for what happened to someone. But we try and again place value on things or judge it, like you shouldn't have that, or you're allowed 60% of it and you're allowed 20%. Like, there's no logic to grief. It doesn't work like that. It just, unfortunately, it would be very neat if it did. we could all weigh our grief and be like, and I get that sometimes with people who, you know, it's been 20 years and they're like, oh well, it's been 20 years so I'm not allowed to feel anything. And you're like, yeah, but do you? That's what matters, isn't it? It's not whether you're allowed, it's like, but do you feel that pain and sadness? And if you do, that's what you got to deal with. Did you go to therapy? Did you get counseling or anything like that? Like, what was offered at the time, happened now, I wonder?
To be honest, I actually genuinely couldn't tell you what happened at the time. I would need to ask my parents about that. Yeah. It's not something we've ever talked about. But no, I don't think we really got... I never got therapy in that sense. It's something I considered when I was at university. I struggled quite badly with depression, which I think is probably unrelated. And I considered it then, and then ultimately didn't go to therapy. And I'm just kind of now coming back round again as a more mature adult who actually can look at myself and go, okay, maybe this is something healthy. It's something that I'm considering, just generally, not specifically for this, but for grief, but for life, for everything.
That's interesting to me, because so many people I've spoken to on the show who've had an early grief, so, you know, 0 to 10 or teenage, the thing we always say that always comes up is, you know, you spend your teenage years utterly confused as to what happened. Your 20s being like, what happened to me has nothing to do with how I'm feeling now. Nothing at all. Like, completely unrelated. And then you hit 30 and you're like, oh, hang on a minute. And you draw the line and you suddenly see this line really clearly that you've never seen before. And you're like, oh, it's all related to that. What? Because you spend your 20s being like, no, don't worry. This is just who I am. This is nothing to do with this thing that happened to me. And I do think it's something, like, I used to be annoyed by that because I didn't get therapy till I was in my early 30s. And I, you know, not saying you're doing this at all, but for ages I was like, no, I'm like, it's nothing to do with, like, my dad dying is just a thing that happened. It's nothing to do with what's happening now. And then once I got to early 30s, I was like, I think that moment molded me so viscerally that everything, every decision, every mental place I've been in, it can be pointed back to that. And even though I was anxious beforehand, yes, this thing came and like stamped me into a shape, which made me look at the world in a certain way, which made me feel a certain way, which made me blah, 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 blah. And it's not that it's not negative. I think that's the thing, I was worried. I was like, oh, therefore I did something wrong, or I'm a bad person, or I'm not fulfilling my potential. And what I sort of felt in my early 30s was like, oh, I see. It's just how it is. It's nothing. It's not good or bad. It's just a thing happened to me. I reacted to it. And now I need to just look at quite what happened. Just sort of investigate it a bit.
Yeah. I think as well, you know, that's it. You know, I think we're a sum of all of our experiences, the good and the bad. And you need to acknowledge that everything's probably connected in some capacity.
Yeah.
Yeah. But,
not saying you have to have therapy at all. So.
No, definitely something that it's been on the radar for a while. So
yeah, like, I think it's, I mean, that's interesting to me as well, that you don't remember anything being off. I mean, you know, perhaps it was, but also I wouldn't be surprised if it wasn't because of the time that it happened. There was a kind of, well, you know, get on with it. That's the best thing to do. And I wonder now, you know, I'm sure mental services are still so hideously underfunded that I'm sure it's still not what it should be, but it's crazy to think, isn't it? Like, really, with something that traumatic, like, the whole town should have been offered wraparound therapy care, but, you know, the resources are not possible. Because, like you said, that when something that massive happens to a whole town, that's, in the way that people have been talking about the pandemic, you know, like, the whole world is grieving for what's happened. Like, that's, and that's, you know, a pandemic. What happened in Dunblane, the whole town was affected by that in some form, because it was small, right? You know, it was a small place. And
it's 9,000 people.
Yeah, like that. That's gonna that's a huge impactful thing, huge. And like, you're right, you know, good and bad, all of your experiences make up who you are. But something as unusual and horrific as that, like, it's going to leave scars mentally and physically. How do you feel now? Like, do you are your parents still living in Dunblane? Like, do you ever sort of pass that? So do you, when you pass the school, like, is it still something that kind of, or is it just one of those things, it's just there?
Yeah, it's just kind of there. It's just always, I guess, in the back of my mind to an extent. I don't, you know, it's not the, you know, I pass through the school and I think, you know, oh, there's my old primary school.
Yeah, yeah.
No more than that, really. But yeah, it has left its mark on the town, but in positive ways as well. You know, there was huge funds raised afterwards, and so they built a really excellent community centre. So as you drive into Dunblane, there's this huge, called the Dunblane Centre, community centre, which was built through the donations and the funds raised after the massacre. And that, you know, that's where we used to go when I was in a band in high school. We would go and practice in the music room there, and I used to go to youth clubs there, and we would hold concerts there when we were, you know, doing it. So it's that sort of thing, you know, that reminds me, but in a kind of a bittersweet way, I guess, yeah. Of, you know, it was an incredible resource to have, but it was made possible by this awful, awful event.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I say my parents do still live there. They still live in the house that we lived in at the time, that we grew up in. So I go back there, you know, a few times a year, but it's my home. It's in the same way it is for anyone else, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, that's the thing. It's, you can't separate it when it's an incident that happens so close, I guess. It's not like you were visiting and you would think, well, I'll never visit that place again, like, this awful thing happened there.
Yeah.
It's wrapped up in, like you said, who you are and all your other experiences. Have you had any griefs since then that you felt have, like, kind of, oh, triggered anything or been difficult to process because of what happened, or not at all? Or...
Yeah. So, you know, I count myself very fortunate. You know, both my parents are still with us, very healthy and well. I lost two of my grandparents kind of back to back, very quick succession, when I was 18. And that was a weird experience for me, because I was living in China at the time, doing a gap year, and I knew that they were sick. My parents came across to visit me at Easter, and they said, "Oh, just so you know, they're both very sick. They both had cancer, smoking related cancers," and they asked me. They said, "Do you want to know if they die? Like, do you want us to tell you if they die?" And I said, no, because I said, look, if you tell me that they've died while I'm out here, I'll fly home. I won't stay.
Yeah.
And that's not what they want. That's not what anyone wants. And it's not going to help me to come back to grieve them then.
Yeah.
So they actually died while I was out there, and I found out when I got back. I literally got back, landed in Heathrow Airport, and my parents picked me up, and they took me, and we sat down in a cafe, and they said they both died within, you know, 2-3 months of each other. And so I kind of already had a bit of a delayed grieving process on that. I went down with my dad and helped gut their house, actually, afterwards, as part of my grieving process, because, like, you know, I wasn't there for them, you know, to see them at the end.
Yeah.
My younger brother was, and he was quite deeply impacted by it. So I guess my way of both helping out and saying goodbye was, I went down, I visited the graveyard, and I helped, you know, get all of the furniture and wallpaper and everything out of the carpets up out of the house so that it could be sold. And but yeah, so I didn't really grieve them immediately. And then maybe 6 months later, I woke up at about 2 a.m. You know, I was staying with my then girlfriend at university, and just, again, that kind of racking, sobbing, you know, real, real tears. And I think that was obviously for my grandparents, but I think it was for everything. You know, it was all of that pent up grief. And then also, kind of in between those two, there was a guy. He wasn't a close friend, but he was someone I'd met doing, you know, I did a lot of youth theatre, And we'd had a big youth theatre festival, which my theatre group had hosted. It was at the McRobert Arts Centre at Stirling University when I was about 16. And so all of these other youth groups came from all around Scotland and put on these shows, and we met up and we were all staying in dorms together and got on really well. And then a few months later, one of the guys I'd met through that took his own life. And yeah, that was another one of those things which I just kind of, you know, I just kind of put a pin in it almost. I was like, oh, that's awful. But I didn't really address it. And so, yeah, there was me again. I would have been 18, maybe 19. And just suddenly all of these bereavements, all of these losses kind of hit me like a tidal wave at 2 a.m. apropos of absolutely nothing.
Yeah, I think it's really hard when life's hard, but I think it's hard when you have a grief very early on. And maybe this isn't fair, but I certainly recognise it myself of because you can't process it. That's what happens when you get older. So the same thing happens. You go, all right, okay, and you carry on because that's what you did when you were a kid.
Yeah.
And then you wake up at 2 a.m. and you're like, why am I sobbing? Like I've definitely experienced that. And it's almost like, I don't know, like a pathway gets burnt in your head of like being very good at putting things to one side. Yeah. And it doesn't mean you don't care. You absolutely care, but you're also able, because you had to do this as a child, to go, right, that's that. But I can't deal with it, but I'll just carry it for a bit. So I'm just carrying it. And then, you know, because you're an adult, you're like, what the hell am I? What is that? That's all this sadness. Oh my God. Like, what is that from? But being able, and again, maybe that's, you know, unfair, but I definitely recognize that myself, of things happening that were very sad, but just being like, right, yeah, sure. Got it. That's what's happened. Okay. Yeah. And kind of like, almost like a numbness from them. Because that's how you've learned how to process grief, is like, I can't process it yet. I need to take it away. I need to carry on my life. And I wonder if you've, perhaps if you experience, you know, your first grief is when you're much older, if it's a slightly different process. Like, I don't know, maybe that's unfair. But I definitely recognise the crying and not quite, like you said, apropos of nothing. Just being like, what this wrenching, howling, sobbing is coming from, you know, someone just told me their granddad died and I'm suddenly sobbing, and you're like, oh, hang on a minute, where's this come from?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, as I say, it can be as little as nothing that sets it off. Just, I don't know if, you know, maybe you were having a dream that you woke up from and you couldn't remember the dream, but it was enough to tip over the edge. But
yeah it's very difficult. And you know, death is a part of life. That is what happens. Like, you know, as you get older, you do know people, or you know, whether it is something as violent or traumatic as what you went through, or it's parents or it's grandparents or friends, it's, you know, it is a part. But it's, yeah, I don't know, maybe I do think that the first time you learn that lesson can make some, not choices, they're not choices in your head, but it just affects you, basically, the first time.
You're making those, your brain is making those connections for the first time. And you know, how you are as an adult is, you know, obviously there's a whole nature-nurture debate, but there's definitely your upbringing, but also just your experiences as a child do affect how you handle anything as an adult. And I think we have a degree of control over it. You know, I think I'm trying to push myself to be a bit more death positive and in my adulthood, and you know, look at death, as you say, as another part of life which happens to everyone, and that's okay, rather than it being this big scary unknown.
Yeah, but that's hard if your first experience is traumatic. I think that's what I'm sort of reaching for, and not saying very well, is that I remember saying this in therapy, you know, because I had terrible, we talked about it on the show, like death anxiety. So the moment someone tells me like, oh, I've got a bit of a cough, I'm like, oh, lung cancer. Like, I'm just like immediately like, oh, you're going to die. And she was trying to talk to me, my therapist. She was like, you know, there's so many instances where people don't die. And I'm like, yeah, but I've got this really strong incidence where someone did. And I guess I wonder if that's the same for you, of like, you know, you there's so many instances, Sam, where things don't happen and everything's fine. You're like, yeah, but the one day it did happen. Like, I was very close to that. So it's really hard. You know, that's how your brain protects you. You learn by experience. Like, oh, I put my hand in the fire. It hurts. Don't do that. Oh, this awful thing happened. Right, that can happen. That's something you need to be prepared for. It's really hard to switch that off in your brain especially when you've experienced it at a young age, when your brain is learning, this is how the world works.
Yeah, you can't logic your way out of everything. You know, as much as it would be lovely if we could, and as much as we try, I think sometimes you just kind of need to almost lean into it to accept it a bit as well.
Yeah.
Not with stuff, as you say, like death anxiety. Obviously, you don't want to just embrace that fully, but at least acknowledging it, and then...
Yeah, I think that's what you said earlier, like, it's acknowledging it, acknowledging the guilt, acknowledging the anxiety, and then you can move through it. It's when you deny it to yourself, isn't it? When you're like, no, that's fine, that's normal. that's just how I am. I think that can be... perhaps, I don't know, I'm struggling with my words today, like, perhaps it's not the best way to process it, is, you know, but when you get better at processing, you see the process in yourself. You're like, oh, I'm feeling the guilt today because of this, but that's okay, I'm allowed to feel that. Like, all of those steps you have to kind of take your brain through. But my God, like, Sam, it's an extremely unusual and traumatic thing to have been through. Like, and whether it, you know, whether you were next to the bomb blast or away from the bomb blast, you're still profoundly affected by it.
Yeah.
And I think that the way you've been talking about it today has just been, amazing. Thank you for talking about it and being so honest about how you've dealt with it, because that not many people have had to go to process what you have had to process.
Yeah. No, absolutely. My pleasure. And, you know, I think I think it's so important not to forget these things, as horrible and traumatic and awful as it is. It's important to remember these things, and it's important to talk about them.
Thank you, Sam. I really appreciate you remembering the children and the teacher of the Dunblane Primary School.
Thank you.
You can follow Sam on Twitter and find out about where he's performing his improv if you head to @thespontplayers. That's @thespont, S-P-O-N-T, players. There's all the information of where he's doing improv. As I said at the beginning, all the information that he mentioned, all the organisations he talks about on the show, I'm going to put in the show notes. So if you want any more information, please do click through to there. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram @TheGriefCast. The show was recorded remotely in both our living rooms. It was edited by Kate Holland. The music was provided by the Glue Ensemble. And remember, you are not alone.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.